It's TNR. TNR 95, the Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Kutcher and Rich.
Okay, keep doing it.
Competition, them life will come sideways. But competition, them must come straight way. Competition,
them life will come sideways. 95, the Sports Hub. We are Kutcher and Rich.
They must come straight way.
Bert Breer, you know him. He writes for MMQB. He also appears on NBC Boston Sports or NBC Sports Boston. He's kind enough to join us, Mr. Bert Breer. Hello, sir.
How you doing, Fred?
Oh, I'm doing all right. I'm doing good. I'm very excited about this Jordan Matthews signing.
I'm sure you are.
Yeah, it's blowing my mind. So tell us about Jordan Matthews and what this means to the Patriots.
Well, I mean, he had been a bigger slot receiver. That was sort of his role when he was drafted to the Eagles, and that's sort of how Chip Kelly envisioned him. He's been a pretty average player since then. Last year, you know, he was a piece in the trade that brought Ronald Darby to the Eagles. And so, he showed some promise earlier in his career. Maybe they can get more out of him. I'm assuming they've got good background on him, obviously, because of the relationship with Chip. But I think at this point, he's probably a guy who's going to be competing for a roster spot. No sure thing to make the team.
Okay, our own Mike Lockhart in the other room is not a fan of this guy. I mean, the deal, he doesn't have a big problem with, because it's only for 1 year. But he believes that he is a soft player. Do you, when you see him play, do you get that impression as well, as that he is a soft receiver?
I mean, I wouldn't say that. Most guys who play in the slot aren't that way. So, most of his experience earlier on. Now, I think the Patriots probably envision him playing outside a little bit more, and he's not a downfield threat. But early in his career, at least, and Chip uses his slots a little different. He doesn't have the shorter, shiftier guys quite as much as the Patriots do. He uses bigger guys in there. I don't know. He got knocked around a bunch in Philly, so soft. I don't know if that's the right word. He's not. I don't think you're going to see a player that's as hard-nosed as like an Edelman, but I don't know if I'd characterize him as soft.
Okay, well, speaking of Edelman, let's say you have a healthy Jordan Matthews, and on top of that you've got Edelman back, and let's say he's healthy, and Chris Hogan. There's a bunch of question marks after that in the receiving core with Dorsett and Mitchell and Kenny Britt and so on. Is that enough going into the season? Do you think that's enough to keep Tom Brady happy and for them to be as effective as they were last year, seeing that they lost Amendola and Brandon Cooks?
Yeah, Rich, I think the big thing is you have to look at the skill position guys as a whole. And I think it's going to boil down to how healthy is Edelman and can Gronk stay healthy? You know, if you've got those two guys, you only really need complementary pieces around them. And even if you only have one of the two healthy, you're okay in most cases with Brady. And so, I think a lot of it's going to tie to how healthy Edelman is and then, Gronk's ability to stay healthy, because obviously that's been pretty touch and go over the last few years. If you got those two guys healthy, you only really need complementary pieces around them. And, I mean, look, Malcolm Mitchell showed a lot of promise a couple of years ago. I know it's easy to forget because we didn't see him at all last year. But, I mean, he played really well in the Super Bowl and is a guy that, they really believed in going into last year. So if you get him back, then I think you've got a pretty solid group with Chris Hogan coming back, too.
All right, Bert, now that we're kind of closing in on the NFL draft and you've had some time to think about it, what are the odds? Put the odds on whether the Patriots move up in the draft or stay put and take the two first-round picks that they have.
I just think if you're going to – here's the problem with moving up in this year's draft is that the teams that are moving up for quarterbacks, and that has increased the price tag. And so, what the Jets did a few weeks ago in moving up, it seemed like they paid a lot. But going from 6 to 3, really, they put the pressure on everyone else who needs a quarterback. Because now, Cleveland's going to take 1 at 1, and that the Jets are going to take 1 at 3. And the consensus is there are 4 top-shelf quarterbacks in this year's draft. So that means there are 2 spots left at that table. And so every team that's trying to move up right now is going to have to do better than the Jets did. And you've got teams competing to move up. Miami, Buffalo, Arizona, Denver could move up a spot. And so, to me, this isn't the year where you're really looking to make a massive move up the board unless you're completely head over heels for one of the quarterbacks. Now, I think the Patriots probably view one of these quarterbacks as a true franchise guy. I think it would be way, I think the cost of going up from 23 and 31 all the way into the top five or six picks is going to wind up being just too much.
All right, there's a couple of theories on Brandon Cooks in the trade. One is that he didn't fit into the offense, and two is that they're building for the future. Because I don't think that we've seen this team, not build and surround Brady with better talent than they had in an offseason in quite some time. Is it true that Brandon Cooks didn't fit into this system?
Yeah, I think you saw that, like, late in the year. You know, when you were without Gronk late in the season and Brady had to make it work, that was really where I think you needed Brandon Cooks to step up and play a bigger role. And you remember they were pacing Amendola late in the year. And so there was a point late in the season where, at least to me, it looked like Cooks really struggled. And that him and Brady, despite the numbers, weren't really on the same page. And this, I mean, could they have given it another year? Sure. But, you know, economics, I think, sort of accelerated the decision there. And that Sammy Watkins got $16 million per. Allen Robinson got $14 million per. And so even if Brandon Cooks is going to take a discount, say he takes $12 million or $11 million, right? Then what does that mean for Gronk, who's making $9 million per? What does that mean for Edelman, who's coming off an ACL and making $5.5 million per? It's just logistically there was no way they were going to be able to pay Brandon Cooks, have a year left on his deal, and you know, I think the fact that they were able to recoup the first-round pick, they did really, really well because this was a player who I think that they were, and they'd really come to the conclusion on that they were going to have to let go after the 2018 season. So to get back that first-round pick they gave up for him, I think they did really well.
Okay, so the Rob Gronkowski whole thing, it's been going on and with the back and forth and the stuff on the Twitter and or Instagram, and now you've got Bill Belichick whose feelings are hurt and everything like that. I keep saying, Why not just pay the guy and make this all go away? What do you believe would make Rob Gronkowski happy as far as the amount that they need to bump his salary to?
I think if you make him the highest paid tight end in the game, and you're not that far off now, I think you'd probably be okay. I mean, if you get him up to, say, $11 or $12 million per, then I think you might be all right. Like, here's the thing, is that, like, he has every right to look at what happened in free agency this year, look at what the receivers were getting, and say, I'm a better player than Sammy Watkins. I'm a better player than Allen Robinson. You can look at Trey Burton. Trey Burton's the third-string tight end on the Eagles. The Bears pay him $8 million a year. That's $1 million less than what Gronk's making here. And so, you know, I think a big piece of this is the fact that he's looking around now and he's saying, well, if I'm going to come back and play and I'm going to put myself through that again, I ought to be paid what I'm worth. And he's clearly worth, you know, if you want to look at what his impact is on the game, as much as the top receivers in football are, the problem is he's a prisoner of his position. And so I think if the Patriots were able to go to him and give him a sweetener and say, hey, we think you're the top tight end in football. You're the second most valuable player on our roster. Let's work something out here. Let's make you the highest paid tight end in the game, and let's guarantee some of that money. You know, I think he would come in. That's just not the way the Patriots have done business in the past. But, you know, I think doing something like that would be a recognition that this guy's a different case, that he's a special player.
Are you buying into that whole thing that Bill Belichick, once he thinks that you're not 100% committed, he would consider moving on from you despite your talent?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll probably field a couple more phone calls before the draft on Gronk. Just, I think teams will be curious to see if he's available.
What would it take to get him? What would convince Bill in order to make a trade?
Let me ask you, would you walk away from him for a one? Say the Ravens come to you and say, we'll give you the 16th pick. Would you do that?
No, because I only have a limited amount of time with Brady.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah. If it's just one number one, no, I wouldn't.
Right, and so here's the thing, right? Like, so I think we all on the outside look at it as they have limited time with Brady. And I think it's logical to look at it that way. And I think it's almost the way they looked at it last year. Like, the last offseason, the 2017 offseason, that was really an outlier. Trading a first-round pick for a receiver, signing Stephon Gilmore at the rate they signed him at. They did things that were sort of outside of the way that they've operated. This offseason feels like they're going back to operating the way that they have in the past, with the long-range view. And I think the reason why is because there's almost no under 25 talent on the roster, right? Like, look at the roster and try to find guys who are under 25 years old who you can see as cornerstones for the next 5 or 10 years. I mean, Trey Flowers, David Andrews, I mean, there just aren't guys there.
Yeah.
And so I think a big part of this is they need to replenish the younger part of their roster. They need young talent, guys on rookie deals. And so, you know, that's part of why now you have 4 picks in the first 64. And why I think that they may listen if a team were to come to them with the idea of a first-round pick. Now I'm with you guys. I wouldn't be for something like that because of the limited time you have with Brady. It's just the Patriots traditionally haven't operated that way, where they're looking at the age of the coach and the quarterback and saying, we need to go all in now. And I think they sort of did that last year. But the way they've operated early this offseason tells me they're back to their normal MO.
All right. Burt Breer from MMQB and NBC Sports Boston. We always appreciate the time, sir.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend.
I see you
too. You do the same.
In your car at 98.5. On your phone on the new Sports Hub app. And on your computer. 98.5thesportshub.com. Toucher and Rich. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Detroit verse, everybody.
Right off the rotten apple by the poison tree. All these females need to email to make noise. And now things changing a lot. Then he shells, seashells, but not by the seashore. If he gangbanging or not, as simple as the alphabet. He F with me, that G shell surely see. He definitely
98.5, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. And Rich, there's a crazy beef going on.
Okay, so we're getting the audio right now of the response. But there has been a big market tease, they call in the industry.
Okay, I don't think the tease gets anything bigger than this.
I guess not. So a big market tease by none other than Sean Hannity. So Sean Hannity came on his show yesterday and started talking about Jimmy Kimmel. Jimmy Kimmel ended up playing audio of Melania Trump at the Easter egg roll, and she's reading a book, and he starts making fun of what she said and blah, 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 blah. So Sean Hannity calls him an ass clown, calls Jimmy Kimmel an ass clown. So Kimmel goes on TV last night and just does this big rant about the term ass clown and starts going and saying that Sean Hannity's the whole ass circus, and all of a sudden there's these photoshops like hashtag Sean's an ass clown, and there's like all these clowns with Sean Hannity. So Sean Hannity yesterday, or actually last night, started tweeting that he has some big thing that is going to take down Jimmy Kimmel that he's going to come on a show with. As a matter of fact, he keeps saying, I'm trying to find the actual tweet, but it's like, you better watch out because I've got audio that is going to ruin your career. And he's calling him, who's the dude who is the head of Miramax?
Oh, Harvey Weinstein.
He's calling him Harvey Weinstein Jr.
But the thing is that Kimmel did the Man Show.
So he also tweeted out a clip from The Man Show.
Yeah.
And we're like, everybody knows he did that show. Like, right. This is nothing new.
Right. He did a show that was politically incorrect.
Yeah.
And it was called The Man Show, mm-hmm. And it aired nationally.
Yep.
For several seasons.
So Hannity got made fun of and is now going to try and get this guy fired.
No, Hannity made fun of Jimmy Kimmel.
But Kimmel's response made fun of him, which prompted this.
Well, Kimmel has been very political on his show, obviously. He's taken to, he cries a couple times. He's taken to, political rants on his show, which mm-hmm. is obviously upsetting some right-wing media members, and now it's just a showdown of crazy videos and things that are going to be exposed.
Yeah, he got a video of The Man Show he tweeted out yesterday, and he keeps calling him Disney's Jimmy Kimmel. It's like more of Disney's Jimmy Kimmel being Harvey Weinstein Jr. And he says, I'll have so much more tomorrow, Jimmy, a.k.a. Harvey Weinstein Jr., at Disney, TikTok, best, Sean, hashtag pervert Kimmel.
Yeah, it's going to be stuff from The Man Show.
Right, and so Jimmy Kimmel just tweets back, I can't wait, and they put his monologue from last night. And he put, here's what has Sean Hannity so very angry, hashtag clown porn Sean, because he called him an ass clown. And he continued to go on and on about it. He said, game on. Oh, ask the boss at Disney, Bob, about the conversation we had about you. Best, Sean, hashtag pervert Kimmel. So he's saying that he's going to ruin Jimmy Kimmel's career today. Today is the day. It's doomsday on Sean Hannity's show.
Now you got me locked in.
Right, as I said, it's a big market tease. And apparently teasing some of it on Twitter last night, he started tweeting clips from The Man Show, which is a show that we've all known about and has existed for years.
Right. And so, and then, yeah, they had women on that were scantily clad. They had things that they said to women.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it probably wouldn't play well right now based on what's going on.
Sure, but I think we all know that that's been there and that's existed. So it is, it's today's the big market tease. Kimmel's going down, apparently. Oh, here's the clip. Okay, so here's Jimmy Kimmel. He's talking about Sean Hannity's show here, okay? And they're playing the clip that Sean Hannity said he was disgusted by.
Be clever and curious, just like a cat. Ask lots of questions about this and that.
About this and that. Kimmel, you realize what this means? You could be First Lady of the United States.
Ass clown Kimmel. Now, I got to tell you something. What a disgrace. Hey, Mr. Kimmel, that's her fifth language. How many do you speak?
Six. I speak six languages. I speak one more. Exactly one more than Melania. I speak English, Spanish, Italian. What else? Chinese. Is Vegenese a language? I don't know. I do not speak ass clown, though. What even is an ass clown? I was thinking about it this morning. Is it an ass that's a clown, or is it a clown that actually lives in an ass, like a little bozo bird in your butt cheeks? I honestly don't know. And more importantly, why is Sean Hannity openly fantasizing about clowns in the ass? Is this what you, is that your thing at night when you have your pants down? When you're at 2 a.m., you got your laptop open to Breitbart, you sneak into the den to hump a pillow from the Ivanka Trump collection quietly so your wife doesn't wake up and force you to go to church. Sean Hannity's problem is, for 8 years while Obama was president...
All right, I don't know if we can play the rest of this, because I heard the rest of it, and I'm like, okay, I forgot. I don't know if it was edited out. So he basically said that Sean Hannity hasn't been able to sit down since Donald Trump has been in office, okay. And then he's talking about clowns and things like that. So Hannity's all riled up now, and he says he's going to end Jimmy Kimmel's career today.
All right, well, all should right. be interesting. Mm-hmm. It's a shame. I'm glad I saw Jimmy Kimmel live when I did.
I saw one of his last episodes.
Dom, go ahead.
Listen, Hannity is a lunatic. I don't know if you guys remember, but in 2008, he had a 3-minute segment about Obama being just because he wanted Dijon mustard on his friggin' cheeseburger.
Right. Well, even the politics of it, it's like, you know, whatever. But if he's going to try to bring down Jimmy Kimmel using something that's everyone knows about, that's been around forever, then good luck with that.
Well, I wish I had the audio, but Craig Gass was at my station in Atlanta, and it was right when The Runaway Bride happened, and Sean Hannity had an exclusive with The Runaway Bride. And Sean Hannity used to do radio in Atlanta, and my co-host Jimmy Barron had his telephone number. So he called this telephone number, and it's this woman answered, and he does Al Pacino. He does the Al Pacino thing.
It's dead on, too.
Yeah, it's Craig Gass.
Yeah.
So they pass him along to another guy, who he convinces that he's Al Pacino. Then we get Sean Hannity driving into work in his car. And he's like, Mr. Pacino, I'm such a big fan of your work, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And he's like, yeah, you know, what about this Runaway Bride? And he's like, yes, you know, it's an exclusive interview that I have. He goes, can I get her number? He's like, I don't think I could do that, Mr. Pacino. And he's like, I like them wild. Like, she looks like she'd be down for a nice roll in the hay. And then finally he figured it out. But okay. My kingdom for that audio. That from 99X.
Sean Hannity used to, I mean, back in the day, I don't know if you met him, but I met him a few times. He actually did something for like an April Fool's prank with the station that we were on. And that morning he took over the station and it was like a rock station. And all day he tried to get people to take a chastity pledge. Like, it was basically to pledge your virginity till marriage. And it was hysterical. It was actually really funny. And he bought all into it. And, I mean, I don't know him personally. I don't know how much he buys into all the things he's saying or whatever. But, you know, for a while when I knew him, he was an all right guy.
Yeah, he was always a conservative host, but he was not to this level. He was not, you know, this this crazed about everything.
Well, even about the politics, whatever. All that stuff aside, he's promising he's going to take down Jimmy Kimmel today, and it sounds like he's going to be using stuff that's been around forever anyway.
Well, maybe he's not.
Well, maybe
he actually has audio.
Bombshell.
Maybe he does.
So this is kind of fun. Kimmel versus Hannity. Let him duke it out.
I mean, this is the world we live in.
It is. Yes, it is.
I mean, if you get a gotcha tape, he's coming down. I mean, I'll watch it. I'll watch Hannity tonight. I want to see what he's got. Take him right down.
It's Al Capone's vault.
You're acting like he couldn't possibly have anything. I mean, he could have something on him.
Okay, well then, why are you taking down Jimmy Kimmel?
Because Kimmel's been very vocal about. He's been very anti-Trump. And Sean Hannity.
Well, it all started with his health care for his child.
No.
So it all came from an organic, like, honest
fine,
place.
But he has been very anti-Trump, and he's attacked people at Fox. And so maybe Hannity feels that he's been sitting on this audio for quite some time. All I know is the fireworks start at 9 o'clock tonight is when Sean Hannity comes on, and then you can watch Jimmy Kimmel. Is he on at 11:30 or 11?
He's prime. I think he's 11:30.
All right, so you can watch that all go down. All right, Dick Donahue, the officer that was a big hero during the Olympic, the aftermath of the Boston Marathon.
Injured during the shootout, yep.
Yeah, injured during the shootout. He's become a friend of ours. He will be in studio. Here are the headlines.
The games are only half of it. Hatcher and Rich. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
98.5, the Sports Hub. We are Toucher and Rich. Dick Donahue, you'll remember, he was injured in a shootout with the two men that set the bomb off during the Boston Marathon. And he has an event coming up, him and his wife, called Stronger. Is your wife going to be there? You got the little kid.
we'll see if we can get somebody to babysit. You know, it's tough when you have an event at a bar. Everybody's going to go to that. Nobody wants to volunteer to babysit.
Bring the kid. It's going to be like 6 days old at that point, like a week old?
Yeah, you know, you've got to get him in there at some point.
Yeah, bring the kid. It was funny because, Dick, you were supposed to be in a couple days ago, and Kim, who is doing the PR for all this, said, hey, Dick's wife went into labor. He's not going to be able to make it in. I'm like, no, that's the time you want to come in. Like, when the newborn has just come out, you've never worked harder in your life than when you have a newborn. You just want to get out of the house.
Well, he was still in the hospital.
I tried.
He tried everything he could. How's it going? Like, this is your third, right?
It is. Third boy. So it's, my house was crazy before. It's crazier now.
Bunch of little Gronkowskis running around?
They're maniacs. Handful.
They never stop fighting, by the way.
Right.
They don't. Yeah. You know, it's, 5 and 2 are the ones you have now?
That's right. Yeah.
The newborn? Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
You gotta have that third. Really muck things up.
We're going to say it off the air. It's like the third one, you don't even have to trip. It's like you just neglect it. The first one, everyone freaks out. You cross the other side of the street when someone's smoking that you see a block away. By the third one, he's playing with knives and running out in the middle of the road. You don't even care anymore.
Oh, that's right.
So it's easy at this point.
All right. So the event is Stronger After 5. It is Wednesday, April 11th from 6 to 8 at Ned Devine's Irish Pub. And it's benefiting the Sean Collier Foundation. If you want to... get tickets, go to strongerafter5.eventbrite.com.
So how have things changed for you as far as from obviously afterwards when you were injured? And I remember seeing you in the hospital that day, and it was just you probably had no idea how things were going to turn out. And now where you are today, where are you now compared to what you thought, where you thought you were going to be after that incident?
Oh, complete 180. And I actually drove by the hospital this morning on the way to get here. And I remember 5 years ago, you came to visit. I barely remember it because of all the good stuff going through me. Yeah. It was a tough day, tough time. Made it back to work after a couple of years of rehab and thought that's where I was going to be. And life changed again, and I had another couple of kids since then. That's the biggest change. I can barely keep my eyes open right now, but I'm back in school again. I'm getting a PhD in criminal justice. So again, I'm supposed to be a street cop, and here I am back at school. So I never expected any of this to happen. You know, you think it can happen, and it does. I'm lucky to be here, and you know, that's what part of the event is to thank the people that have been there every step of the way, not just for me, but all the other people that have been affected by this incident, and it's there's so much good that's come out of it. It's been an amazing experience.
Now, Dick, this is an event that you're having, and everyone wants to attend. But the last event I went to that you had, Sarge was there.
I've heard Sarge can't come this year because
he wasn't invited. His name's on a very special list.
Damn it, I don't see your name here.
I was with my wife. I was exhausted. I was exhausted, and I had been drinking, and I saw Dick, and I'm like, and Dick, you know, was doing the rounds, and I was sitting down at the bar with my wife. And boomity boom, here comes Sarge, just taking a seat right next to me.
Yeah, giving everybody the salute. It was fantastic.
Yeah, that's,
I got a couple salutes.
I apologize for leaving early. But I was put in a situation where I had to go.
Yeah, gotcha. We ushered you out the back door.
The great thing is that the tone of his announcements always matches the vibe of the party itself, in that it never does. He just continues to yell when he gets on the mic. He doesn't have any kind of intonation.
Oh, no, he had nothing to do with the mic.
He was just there.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
What do you think Dick said? Oh, hey, Sarge, can you do the announcement?
No. He takes it over. Like, he was at that thing with the Mr. Sid deal. He just grabbed the mic and said, I'm hosting.
This was Dick's thing.
It was good. He was invited last year.
Not this year.
Have you learned your lesson, Dick Donahue?
He had Patriot players.
My tweets are lighting up.
Sarge, salute. So
I can make it.
With the five-year anniversary coming up, there's going to be a lot of stuff on TV. There's going to be a lot of stuff, in the press, as someone who obviously was in the middle of it, and you know the story is your story. Do you avoid watching that stuff, or is it something that you want to see how you're represented, and so you're curious? How do you handle that kind of thing on such a highly emotional event in your life?
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many things going on. It's hard to even watch TV for a minute or you know, turn on the radio. It's just, you know, I feel like I'm always on the go, whether it be doing a blood drive or coming out to an event.
Always time to turn on the radio.
That's right. During my workouts, you guys can ruin it, and I'm like laughing around the gym every day.
That's right. Every day we bring the yucks.
But actually, the last year I got to train officers down in Florida. This year I'm going to Alabama to train police officers down there. And it's become almost like an annual event where it just lines up and I go down there. I say, look, you know, last year was this year, you know, this day 4 years ago.
Yeah.
This actually happened to me. This is what helped save my life. This is what I did wrong in my work-life balance. And I'm going to do that again. I think I improve on it every time. Do that again. Coming up on the anniversary of the Watertown and Cambridge events, so that's become pretty near and dear to my
heart. How do you think the I know that movie Patriots Day, the scene of the shootout that involved you, how accurate was that depiction?
Admit it was cool. I think we talked about this.
No. Well,
that you were a character in a movie is pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I put that on my resume, IMDb.
No, we talked about that. I mean, regardless of the
but the I'm talking about the actual scene of how everything went down. Other than, of course, the completely, I could go off for honestly a full hour on the completely invented
even my
character
parents,
of Mark Wahlberg.
Even my parents knew
how he happened
dumb.
To be in every place. There, what jurisdiction are you? Because you happen to be in Cambridge and you're also working in Boston.
No, the worst part was when they laid out.
We'll get to that in a second. We'll get to that in a moment. Don't jump ahead because
we have to have
a discussion.
And I was laying there. And I said, "You drove off."
Okay, so in the movie, let's talk about that scene.
In
the movie, you're lying on the ground, and Tommy Saunders. God, what if I hate him. So Mark Wahlberg comes up and puts his hand on your character and then just leaves you. All right. Just as far as how it was led up to, that scene, how accurate was what actually went down?
Well, they didn't focus too much on my personal experience, which is, you know, completely fine. You know, it's a movie, it's a storyline.
Yeah.
It was pretty crazy, pretty insane. I don't have too many memories. My memories even shattered back kind of about 6 months back.
Really?
Yeah.
So leading up to that event, it's hard to piece together things. And every once in a while, you get kind of like a postcard flash.
Exactly. Yeah. I can remember just a little bit, like just that split second, for lack of a better term, the uh-oh moment. And that was lights out. But, you know, I've been recounting the story from the officers that came to my assistance, and for them it was pretty harrowing, and to make the decisions to get in the ambulance, get me going, get me to the hospital, and all that, everything coming together. And that's why I throw this event, to thank these guys.
Yeah.
They're special in my life. And the people that came together afterwards, it has been, really something that could have been almost a movie in its own.
Was the scene where Mark Wahlberg got called in because he was the only cop who could tell you what stores were on Boylston Street the dumbest movie scene of all time?
Oh, yeah, the Whiskey Steakhouse. That's next to the CVS.
I mean, we got to get Tommy in here. Thomas is the only one. Even Google Maps can't handle this.
Even my parents, who have no idea what happened, were like, why the hell would he have to... Like, no one knows a street downtown?
Okay, they're looking, by the way, in the movie at, like, 1,000 pictures of the crime scene, and they're trying to figure out what's at the crime scene. Oh, what's that? Well, you know, you could have either just, Google Maps the thing, or maybe everyone knows what's on that street.
Right. Even I do, and I never go on the street.
Right. But this is something that you're now teaching other cops how to handle situations like the one you were in.
Mm-hmm. You're also doing motivational stuff, right? I see you going around doing motivational stuff.
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it's more of just self-deprecation and talk about all the things I messed up along the way. But it's been really a learning experience until you really get knocked down to... Well, you don't have to get knocked down as far as I did. I was in a tough place.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, learning every step of the way, having a great family around me, having people to help out with everything from, you know, finding what next steps in my career should be, finding out, you know, what I can do to get help when I have to get another surgery. It's been some really important things I've learned about myself and about the community that I try to spread the good word and lessons learned.
Because you originally wanted to become... You go back to the police, right? You wanted to be a policeman again.
I did. I went back for a short period of time, and my left leg is still in tough shape. So.
And that was hard for you, right?
It was.
Okay. But now
it seems to be even something greater, like almost like at least not a greater, but it seems to be a different purpose that you did not imagine going into that I seem to find a ton of meaning in, teaching people who are in your situation how to handle it.
Yeah, I mean, again, something I never thought about, and here I am doing it. I've trained probably thousands of police officers now, and just when I hear them say, "Hey, you know, your attitude, the things you said, the keeping, you know, work life balance, and kind of the mistakes you made," I make those too because that's what cops do, and kind of shedding some light on that, and having people come talk to me afterwards or reach out to me, you know, a month or week after I give a talk has really given me a lot more purpose and a way to affect the community and policing and profession.
Well, you're also personally responsible for like a ton of blood being donated. That's been another one of your causes, correct?
Absolutely. I've worked with the American Red Cross basically since the summer of 2013.
Saved your life.
I mean, 46 units right in and out of me, and some of it stayed, and that's why I'm alive. You know, without that. Without officers running, driving to hospitals and the blood bank and getting that to me and bringing boxes into the emergency room and operating room, I wouldn't be sitting here, and I wouldn't, you know, my first son wouldn't have a dad. So it's really important to me.
Does the smell of Purell make you gag? Does it remind you of being in the hospital locked there?
I just going to the hospital the other day. I just
brings it back.
Yeah. I do not like going into hospitals. Don't like it.
Well, yeah, the third kid. Like an idiot.
What are you doing?
Well, now we're going to try for the girl, right? I think Kim's listening at home.
You had the ultimate out. You were like, I'm a hero, damn it. I can do what I want. I don't have to have a third kid.
No, but
what else can I give you?
Because now you got to get like an SUV. And now you can't fly
That's
anywhere.
That's true. The car size just expanded with the third kid.
Right.
I mean, think about that. No sedans for you anymore.
You can't fly anywhere because there's like another guy.
It's right.
Well, I just go solo. That's fine.
That's right. Just go on your own. Spring break.
There's nothing like going on vacation by yourself and having a hotel room to yourself.
So you got Jerry Thorne involved in this, right? I like him a lot. He's hosting this thing. It's at Ned Devine's. This coming Wednesday from 6 to 8 p.m., Heather Abbott's going to be there.
Yep, Heather Abbott, Adrian Haslett, Ed DeVoe, so some people that have really been affected by the Boston Marathon bombing. And we call it Stronger After Five because all of us have stories to tell about how this one moment, one second in our life changed everything forever. And hopefully, we've all become stronger from being really knocked down to the bottom.
Well, I mean, a lot of these stories, it's just, you know, your story is obviously one of the success stories that people look at right now and are inspired by. But, you know, this is great that it's benefiting the Sean Collier mm-hmm. Foundation. I know, obviously, close friend of yours, and it's a great cause. If you can't go, is there a way to donate? Because I'm not going to be able to make it. I unfortunately, Wednesday night, I have something I have to do.
I don't. I can go.
Good, but I can't. So how do I donate?
I'm a better person.
Are you going to pregame right after the show and roll right in, or
if I pregame after the show? You're not going to want me there.
So how do people
donate?
You've
seen me in that condition.
So you can get tickets there on the Eventbrite site. You know, you can purchase the ticket and make a donation. There's also through the Officer Sean Collier Foundation. They have a marathon team. They're raising a lot of money there, so that's another way to donate.
Okay.
And just go right to their fundraising page for the Boston Marathon, which thank goodness I'm not running.
Yeah.
And so those folks have been out training and in Sean's memory and honor, you know, he was really involved with the community and the fund's going to promote some good things happening across the country.
And what I've truly been wanting to ask you is, have you ventured down to Foxwoods and got yourself some trash can nachos from Guy Fieri's place down there yet? Because I know you're a huge fan of the Fieri man.
They shut the one down in Times Square.
I was just about to say that. You know, if I had to look back at the worst thing that's happened in 2017, it's Guy Fieri shutting down in New York.
Yeah.
It's the best thing is having my son this week. So, I have not gotten the trash can nachos yet, but they do look delicious.
You're out of bounds.
As long as I can get some donkey sauce on the side, we're all good.
It's just aioli.
You know what's weird about those?
Which is just mayonnaise.
You know what's weird about those nachos? They got cheese on them.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's really quite a bold take on nachos. All right, so everyone go to strongerafter5.eventbrite.com.
I'll tweet out the link, too.
Thanks.
We'll do that.
And remember that Sarge will not be there.
It's not allowed.
He'll be
basking in the glow of WrestleMania by that point. He's probably covered in peanut butter right now.
Seeing those pictures come in are, wow.
Yeah.
Standing.
Him and the Wong father, showing him a good time.
Yeah, they're right over there, right over my shoulder, looking after me. Well, Dick, it's always a pleasure, sir. Congratulations on the newborn. Congratulations on the event. And we look forward to seeing you soon.
Thanks, guys.
All right, see you, Dick.
All right. We will be right back.
Toucher and Rich.
Yes.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
We're Toucher and Rich. What's the name of the movie?
Patriots Day?
Yeah. Rich has a problem with Patriots Day, but I mean...
How do you see that movie and not have a problem with what Wahlberg did? Like, how he made himself... He created a character to make himself the God figure throughout the entire thing.
I just thought it was corny. I thought it was kind of funny.
That he was like, let's get every Boston stereotype. He's a cop on the edge. And
I thought it was funny. I really did. It was so bad, it was funny.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He was so awful. And the way that, like, how anyone could buy that he happened, like, not only was he at the finish line for the marathon, he also was the guy who got the call from the gas station after the Sarnaevs like hijacked the car. He was also at Watertown. He's the guy who found them in the boat. Like, he's everywhere. He happened to be at every place of every prime point of the movie at the right time.
That's how it happened in real life.
It did. Yes, Tommy Sanders. But this, of all the parts of the movie, this was the one part where I actually almost audibly laughed, because it might be the worst scene I've ever seen in a movie.
It is dumb.
They are set up, the FBI and everybody, Kevin Bacon and John Goodman, they're set up over at the seaport.
The highest ranking FBI people.
Right.
The
top
people,
of the top.
Top criminal investigators in part of, in maybe the world.
The crime scene is all laid out in front of them. They've created a mock Boylston Street. There are people on computers everywhere, thousands of pictures of what went down, and they're like, you know what? There's only one guy who actually knows what's happening here. Let's call in Tommy Saunders. So they literally call in Mark Wahlberg's character from the other side of town, and he comes in, and here's what happens.
Feds want to talk to you. Rick, Sergeant Saunders.
Thank you for coming so quickly.
Whatever it is, I didn't do it.
Ed tells me you're familiar with this area.
Yeah, why? So, I am White Hat. At exactly 2:45, I am seen by the surveillance videos outside the Forum restaurant, okay? Now, Sergeant, as you can see, we've recreated the Boylston Street crime scene. Now, let's move left of boom.
Left of what?
Left of boom. Left of the explosions. We need to trace them backwards. You know this street, right?
Yeah, now I know what you're doing. That's the finish line, yeah. All right, so...
Where's your 244? Who can see?
It's gotta be Crate and Barrel.
Crate and Barrel? Anybody?
Checking Crate and Barrel.
more stuff. Where else?
Give me a minute, all right? Let me think. Across the street, the Vanderbilt. No. Vanderbilt, Milwaukee. Remember that kid stole a purse from Solas? He ran into pizza. Back Bay Social Club. Teddy put new patio cameras last year.
Back Bay Social Club.
Searching Back Bay Social Club.
What's next to that,
still
Tommy?
Not clear enough for facial recognition.
All right. Keep going.
All right, fair enough. 2:42
p.m.
It's the best part.
Whiskey Steakhouse.
Whiskey Steakhouse. First of all, nobody calls it Whiskey Steakhouse.
Well, regardless of all that.
Second of all, what business is next to Whiskey's? I don't have no idea what's next to Whiskey Steakhouse.
Yes, they couldn't. By the way, those places were still there. I mean, they could have just had a guy on the street.
How about, yeah.
Like, use his iPhone to film a walk up the street and bring it to the FBI.
Google Maps. Google effing maps. How about everybody in that building from Boston knows what's on that street? No, you have the pictures of the scene in front of you.
You don't need Google Maps. They've been investigating that street for several days.
Yeah.
The idea that they needed someone locally to tell them what was there.
What's across the street from where the bomb went off? Where there's video 24/7 on the news right now. Lord and Taylor.
Give me
Lord
a
and Taylor.
Give me a second. Crate and Barrel. Conor McGregor went nuts yesterday. And it's pretty interesting.
No, it's great because now we have breaking news as to what the consequences might be legally.